This is the Beltline to Broadway podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Patrick Torres, Heather Strickland, and Candace Cox. For 30 years, Raleigh Little Theater has been producing its version of Cinderella as a holiday treat for Triangle families. But last year, the show could not go on due to the pandemic, which gave RLT's executive director, Heather Strickland, and artistic director, Patrick Torres, a chance to pause and reflect on the show's messaging. What happened next is a journey of discovery and community engagement that is truly inspiring, and that is where my conversation with Heather, Patrick, and Candace Cox begins.
2020 is the first year that we have not done Cinderella in over 30 years, so this has been a longstanding holiday tradition. It is a very different version of Cinderella, and it has evolved over the years in many ways. The first time it was performed was here at RLT, but for many years it moved down to the Performing Arts Center downtown, and then it moved back here, so it has changed a number of times. The cast size has changed, and also it's based in a tradition of panto, which I'll let Patrick talk more about. But, you know, it's something that has always been a part of every season, even as the theater has evolved. And really the process that we're going to talk about tonight was, you know, while we sort of look at each season, you know, every year to plan for it moving forward, you know, Cinderella was always just a given that it was going to be done rather than sort of thinking about what needed to be done for Cinderella for the next year. Patrick, do you want to talk more about the history?
This will be the 37th year. It was brought to RLT by my predecessor, Haskell Fitzsimmons. And it's been a holiday tradition for many families since then.
Can you talk to me a little bit about your process of interrogating scripts, evaluating scripts, and selecting the work, the new work that you put on stage, so we kind of have a point of reference?
The process of season planning is a really complicated process. It's really complex, especially when you're producing as many shows as we're producing. I mean, there's just so much that an artistic director and a community who's helping the artistic director maybe select a season really has to think about. And you know, that includes like what makes this play relevant is kind of where I start. Is this play meaningful to our community? Does it ask a question that will help us see each other better and more clearly? Does it have an opportunity to introduce us to characters that we've maybe not met yet that we need to meet in order to help build our empathy? Or is it just a play that's going to make us laugh, you know? And so what we do is like we read the plays and we really start to ask all of those questions, but then we have to also think about the opportunities that it provides for actors in the area, the opportunities it provides for our volunteers. You know, we don't always want to just do contemporary plays, for example, because we would like the volunteers in our costume shop to learn how to build fashion from other decades, things like that. So there's a ton that goes into it. And then when we start talking about cultural choices, that is also such a critical part of what we're doing, you know, because we are looking for opportunities to tell stories that are not our own, that are more reflective of the community around us, that maybe we don't necessarily represent on staff, but we know exist in Raleigh and in the Triangle. And how can we get these stories on stage and make sure that we're giving voice to people who maybe haven't traditionally had a voice in the theater or in this building? And so we're really looking for those kinds of opportunities as well. Oftentimes, those voices include women and people of color, the LGBTQIA community, really looking for shows that allow us to expand kind of our vision of the world and who our neighbors are. So we're always looking at that. And we're always looking at how plays are built. And oftentimes, this is a really good example. So people love comedies. I love comedies. Comedy really only works because it reinforces social code, right? So when a comedy is written, it is written to reinforce social code of the time. So when you look at these really great, even farces that are considered classics now, they can be problematic because they kind of exist maybe in a time and were written in a time where the point of view of the playwright and the characters in the play was much more misogynistic than we are now, or that we hope that we are now. And so, like, we don't want to put a comedy on stage that is not reflective of who we are now and kind of the things that we are going through. So it gets tricky when you start to pick those kinds of things. So if you kind of extrapolate that out into like all areas of consciousness and like the social code that we're all living in, you know, some plays have kind of timed out. And so we're always looking at that. So with Cinderella, you know, to your question, it was a tradition. It's a thing that we did every year. We didn't interrogate it in the same way that we had before. And so now we're really thinking about like, how do we look at it in the same way that we would look at anything that we're selecting for our seasons?
And I'll just add one more piece to that, Lauren. You know, Patrick talked about really thinking through what are the opportunities that are held within the community. And, you know, one of the many things that he is so amazing at is, you know, he's never centering himself in the selection process. It truly is about like what is the season that our community needs in all the ways, the stories, the opportunities. And, you know, it's never looking at just one show within a season individually. It's also kind of looking at as a whole and say, okay, what is this year about? What are we raising up? What are the issues that we're raising up? Who are the playwrights that we're raising up? And what is this saying to our community about who we are in this moment?
You've received some community feedback about Cinderella over the years, and you've categorized those concerns into three buckets, which I kind of love because it makes it easy for people to understand in the context of this space. So can you talk to me about those three buckets that people have expressed concerns about?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the primary buckets that many people see as an audience is kind of the bucket of misogyny. Like, what does this play, what does this fairy tale say to young women about what they should aspire to? Do they need a prince to rescue them? That is a criticism of the fairy tale that, of course, exists anytime you produce Cinderella. But it is something that our really amazing creative teams have been working on. Like, how do you give Cinderella some agency inside the story? And so that's one of the buckets. And then another bucket is diversity. So not only like who has access to the role of Cinderella or the king or the prince, but also and that's like, you know, can different ethnicities play those roles? Our answer is yes. We've made those decisions in the past, and the current team led by Mike McGee, they're doing a really good job of really thinking about that and prioritizing that in a very truthful way. I think that's the thing for me that I really love about what they're doing is it's not about you know, just offering roles to people because they want to diversify. It's about like, you know, viewing and recruiting and finding talent and you know, casting folks. And so that's really exciting, I think. But it's also about body diversity. You know, we've heard that a lot is like, you know, what is beauty? And then the final one is, you know, coming from the transgender community about the panto portrayal of the stepsister. So if folks don't know or are not familiar with our production of Cinderella, it's based on English panto tradition. And part of that tradition has, you know, cross-dressing characters. And so we, in you know, the prior 36 productions of Cinderella here, have cast men in those roles, including the Tim Cherry and Dennis Poole, who have played those roles for over 20 years most recently. And so those are really the big buckets. Every year, since I've been here, I've gotten emails and phone calls after Cinderella closes with people expressing, you know, that criticism and just wanting me to think about it.
As a result of the concerns that have been expressed, you all conducted a survey which went out last March. You reached out to your cast, your crew, your volunteers, audiences, through listservs, socials, your mailing list, in every way possible, you made the survey accessible. What did you learn from those survey results?
Well, I personally learned that these phone calls and these emails were shared by a broader amount of people than I imagined they were. Mm-hmm. You know, for us as a community theater, we want our community involved in every aspect of everything we're doing. And so for us, like, you know, I could have, as the artistic director, I think in many situations, the artistic director is just allowed to go, you know what? I've had some phone calls. I've had some emails. I'm pulling that show. We're not doing it anymore. And I suppose I could have done that. I could have wrestled with Heather about that a little bit. But, you know, we were so much more interested in like, well, let's have a conversation about it. Let's let our community talk to us about their perception of Cinderella. And what was so amazing and lovely about that was that there were a lot of folks who, while they had criticism, while they had things to say in those three buckets that I just described, they also talked about the magic and the wonder and the beauty of the tradition. And so, you know, for me, it was like really interesting to see, like, I think because this is who we are as a people, and I think we're trying to break out of it, right? But we are binary people. It's either all good or it's all bad. So it's easy to imagine like the people that are going to be critical of it are just going to be critical of it and not love anything about it. And we found that there's a way more of a mix. Like I can be critical of a thing and still be really respectful of what it's trying to do. And then that, I think, if you like sit in the tension of that, that's where you start to see the pathway to real change. Like what's great about it, but what's harmful about it. And let's embrace both of those things and see how we mend it. You know, I think that's the journey we've been on as a company.
Yeah, I think Patrick just stated that so beautifully of, you know, there was nearly 400 responses to the survey. So yes, we put it out there, but our community wanted to be a part of this conversation. I mean, that is a tremendous response. And they took the time, you know, because the questions that we asked were not just, you know, click a few boxes. We, you know, had some open-ended questions and they really gave us a lot of feedback. And, you know, it took a lot for us to process that. We shared it with our entire staff and our EDI committee of our board so that we were really kind of getting a broad perspective on what are you seeing in this. And, you know, we spent a lot of time going through all of those. Patrick and I both went through and did our own sort of condensing of all the feedback that we have. And, you know, there was one question in the survey that asked, do you think that Cinderella reflects the EDI values of Raleigh Little Theater? And in that question, we linked the page on our website where we have our EDI values and commitments that we've made as an organization. And there were many folks that, because they could kind of rate it on a 1 to 5, you know, 5 being yes, absolutely, it adheres to all of these values, and 1 being no, not at all. And there were lots of folks that, you know, certainly said, yes, this meets these values. I don't understand why it doesn't. But it was just over 50% that said it didn't absolutely meet all those values. And maybe they were like a 4 or a 3, but something that I reflected on a lot is like, don't I want 100% of these to be the 5? Like, don't we want everything that we do to absolutely like not be questionable against these values? And the personal answer for me was yes, I want 100% to be 5. So if we're not there, if we're at less than 50% or saying, absolutely, these are your values, then we have to take the time to interrogate this, because our community is reflecting to us that, yeah, we need this conversation. We want to be engaged in it. It is the conversation that is needed.
You all invited the public into a Zoom community meeting, town hall, so to speak, to give feedback, to hear the results of the survey. So you were very transparent about the survey results. And then you opened it up to questions and comments from the public. And one thing that you talked about in those meetings, Patrick, is the fact that many people who I want to believe people want to be allies. And a lot of people were saying, they could see where the portrayal of the stepsisters might be a problem, but they didn't understand why. You brought in Kansas, who is an LGBTQ advocate, who identifies as a transgender woman.
Thank you. And I do want to add the caveat of color, transgender woman of color. For me, as a Black person, I'm like, that takes forefront always, because it walks into the room before I do.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So Candace, what is harmful for people who don't know, we're just going to educate them right now, surrounding the man in the dress trope. Why is this portrayal harmful to the transgender and gender nonconforming community?
So first, I want to say that me coming into RLT, I have done so little in terms of needing to educate. I mean, Heather and Patrick, I've done so little in needing to educate them on why this is harmful or things of that nature, because they're just so amazingly knowledgeable and aware of everything. Really, what I've helped with them to do is to figure out a way to actually make sure that their message is being heard in the right way by those that need to hear it, you know, so people who are gender nonconforming and trans, and how do we let them know that RLT is a welcoming place? Because it is. I mean, this conversation is being had now, but my discovery to my authentic self started in theater and started at RLT when I was 10 years old, because that's where I learned that expression and embracing, you know, who you are and your uniqueness is something that is welcomed. And RLT did that for me. And Heather and Patrick have continued to carry that torch. So I want to first applaud them. But then I want to, remind us, North Carolinians especially, of a very ugly recent truth. And that is HB2, or the bathroom bill, if you will. And the people who supported it said that the danger was that men would dress up as women and go in bathrooms, and they were predators, and that they would wear a disguise. So we immediately identified anyone who dresses in the exterior gender that's not congruent with what we perceive. So we perceive someone to be a cis heteronormative man, they dress like a woman, they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes, they have some ulterior motive. We already had that kind of ingrained in us. And then when we look at the play, it's a comic, you know, sort of effect. And we immediately told people that trans people, gender nonconforming, LGBTQIA+ people exist purely for your entertainment, that we are here to be laughed at, and that you should laugh. It's funny. It's funny when someone's voice is deeper than what you think it should be because of how they look. It's funny if they don't look, this like picture perfect, like Western concept of femininity. It's funny. And furthermore, they don't even deserve your respect. Of course, Prince Charming wouldn't like them. They're not real women. Of course they're going to be evil and deceitful. So it really helps to solidify. And for me, the danger is not with the adults, because we're too smart, you know, but it's with the children. And it's, what message are we telling them? Because they're actually going to be the ones who are going to pick up on the subtle messages that we're not going to. And I think that's why a lot of adults in the interviews, for example, said, I see why it's a problem. I don't understand why it's a problem. Because we're adults. We have the benefit of the doubt. And I mean, I myself have a theater background. And I'm like, you have to make sacrifices sometimes in telling historical stories. There are going to be things that could possibly be offensive if you're going to stay true to the script. But children are going to pick up on the more subtle messages. Laugh at them, they're a joke. Because if that is someone's first introduction to an open person who's exterior appears different than what the child perceives. So if I present as a woman, I was born biologically a male. So if that's a child's first introduction, then what happens is that child goes out and that child is, you know, waiting in line at the grocery store a couple of years later, and they see someone who is more obviously at the impetus of their transition, and the child smirks and laughs and points and giggles. The parent's embarrassed. The parent's not going to immediately reprimand the child and say, you know, you need to, you know, allow people to have their journey and self-expression is a, no, they're going to be humiliated and go like, you know, oh, hush, hush, stop, stop. And it's like, you know, you leave that man alone, thinking nothing of it. It's innocuous. But the problem is now that child is 19 years old. And that child is out at a bar for the very first time, and he's in college, and he sees this really pretty woman in his smoky, you know, underage drunken haze, and he hits on her, and his friends go, dude. So now those people that he knows are a joke, he's now being a part of that joke, and nobody wants to feel like they're on the outside. And so what he does is he goes and he waits for her when she leaves, and he beats her up and he kills her. And that is the real reality, because we can't talk about what's the harm, especially in the month of November when TDOR, or Transgender Day of Remembrance, is right around the corner. And each year for the past 5 years, we have seen a record number increasing of trans women, and in particular trans women of color, who are murdered. And people ask how. So I'm sure this seems like a tangent, and but I'm like, no, this is how. The way it happens is people are taught.
I've had similar conversations on this platform, and I do want to make a distinction for people, Candace, so that we're covering all our bases here at Beltline to Broadway, because that's what we do. There is a difference between the, and I'm going to say the man in the dress trope, because that's typically the portrayals that we're seeing either on stage or in media. There's a difference between that trope being the butt of the joke, which is what we're talking about here, and drag. So can you kind of tease out the difference?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So first and foremost, drag is an art form. They are artists. They are not people who are following direction and wearing a particular costume. They're artists. And it's really important to note that for so much of, in the United States in particular, our history in terms of LGBTQIA plus people, it was illegal. You know, it was illegal to be gay. It was illegal to wear women's garments. That's actually what sparked Stonewall in New York City. And the people who were the preachers within that movement, the people who told the stories and were the storytellers, and we know that storytellers are the real keys to our past and our history, the people who helped us to cope with the change and the things that we were dealing with, those were always drag performers, because drag performers always have had their finger on the pulse of what is going on, what's happening, what's taking place. And for so many, they offered that that catharsis, but they also they provided something that LGBTQIA+ could make and could be proud of. And I encourage them today, be proud of it. RuPaul's Drag Race. We look at this phenomenon that's taking place, and it's like, what is it doing? It is drag that people are admiring and is something of beauty. And it is also important to note that drag performers are not gay men. You can be a drag artist and you can be anything that you want to be. There's no correlation between what you do as an art form and sexuality, because drag is an art form. So that would be the same as you saying every painter is whatever, you know, or like, well, if Vincent Van Gogh is crazy, everybody who does oil paintings is crazy. And that's not true. And that's the same thing with drag. Women can be drag queens. They can be drag kings. Cis men, anybody can do drag. Drag is about the art form. And it's not just the art form of female or male impersonation. It is the art form of taking and showing people the beauty that you see that can be in the humanoid form, if you will.
That is a great explanation. I love that. As Patrick mentioned, the show Cinderella for RLT is very much in the spirit of Panto Productions. I'm wondering, has it ever been okay? Because Panto tradition goes back like a century or centuries. The Shakespeare tradition, where men dressed as women on stage, that goes back. Has it ever been okay for men to portray or dress as a woman on stage? And if so, when did it not become okay?
There is no point that it didn't become not okay. And I say that because in that same vein, there was once a time when white people were cast in ethnic roles. And it's kind of like saying, what moment can you say blackface wasn't okay? Was it the Emancipation Proclamation? Was it the battle at Appomattox and the signing of the treaty, which ended the Civil War? You know, what one thing happened? Was it the passing of the civil rights, you know, legislation? It's like, no, there's nothing that happened that said like, it was okay to be in blackface. Now it's not okay. Same thing, because when we started, when we go all the way back and look at theatrical history, we have to ask ourselves, why were men playing women? Well, that has a lot to do with the fact that we believed that women were inherently less than, and that women were illiterate. They couldn't read. They couldn't memorize lines. We have that tradition from the same period at which we developed something called a hysterectomy. A hysterectomy literally means to cure a woman's hysteria, because before we had the hysterectomy, we thought women going through PMS were going through it because their ovaries had flipped upside down, and we would put them on a board and flip them back and forth. And we thought women were just like not capable. Like, they couldn't be in theater. That was inappropriate. They couldn't be exposed to sexual things because it would turn all of the women, you know, into something. So it's never been okay to ever say that a woman is less than a man. It's never been okay to say that women are not completely capable, if not more so, quite frankly, to do things that men do. And I'm like, never, ever in our history. The problem and the shift that we have seen is we finally have gotten to a point. And when I say gotten, I don't mean that we're there. I mean, we're just now having the real conversation about what equality for women actually means, you know? And when I say we're having that conversation, I'm like, we're not even doing a very good job, because we have states like Texas, which are setting us back 200 years with their legislation right now, where we're actually saying, hey, we in the General Assembly believe that we actually have a right to dictate a woman's body. And I'm like, you have no right to ever tell a woman what to do with her body. Sorry, I'm an activist first, an educator second. But yeah, that is in response to the onstage question, when has it ever been appropriate? It's just not. It's not okay. It's not okay for anything, for race, gender. I love that Patrick talked about it and that they have embraced and really tried to put at the forefront, you know, not just colorblind casting, but I'll just say blind casting, period. That they have really tried to put an emphasis to say anyone is capable. For them, it's really about you being a part of that tradition of progress that RLT is known for, and you being a part of that, you know, tradition that elicits so much emotion with people. You know, the first thing I thought was 400 respondents to a questionnaire from a community theater. I promise you that there are community theaters, you know, that are much bigger that would give their left tooth to have 400 people respond and have an emotional reaction to something that they do. So
I want to say, I mean, this, it might sound like I'm disagreeing with Candace a little bit, but I'm not. You know, our next production after Cinderella is Pride and Prejudice by Kate Hamill. And that adaptation calls for 8 actors to be cast and doubled. And women play men play women. They just play the character. But for me, you got to look at mechanics, and you got to look at like the way a play is built, right? So when a play like Candace is talking about, like what was happening in Shakespeare's time, or it's misogynistic, or in the case of Cinderella, when the joke is when the joke is at the expense of someone's personhood or identity, it's a problem. When it's functioning to tell a story as a group of actors, like performing an entire story together, I think it can be very different. Now, I may learn in the future that I'm wrong about that too. That's the other thing that's amazing about this journey that we're on, is just this constant reassessment of what is right and what is wrong. And we will continue to listen to our community. But we just did a production of Snow White earlier in the year, and there's only 2 actors, and they played all of the parts, and they would switch costumes sometimes and all that. And it worked so well. And we had such great responses, and it was because none of it was a joke. None of it was attacking someone's identity or personhood. It was just a function of the development of the story. And so, you know, I think that and that is a razor's edge. I mean, I think for me, it's like important too, to just put into this conversation that we as an organization value tradition. We value so much the contribution of Tim and Dennis, who played these roles as the stepsisters for 24 years. Those 2 human beings never meant harm to anybody. They meant good to everyone. They sacrificed 24 years of their holidays with their families to be in this show, to do this for this community. They were not, there was no malintent. One of the things that Candace said to me early on that I just cherish and will carry with me forever is because she has such a long history with RLT, it's where she got her start. I was talking about tradition and the panto tradition and how hard it would be for us to not see Tim and Dennis in these roles, because how much we love them and how much we care about them. And Candace lovingly said to me, RLT's tradition is adaptation. RLT's tradition is looking at the world and the community and responding to the community. And that just like blew me apart. You know what I mean? Like, I love that. I think it's so true. Long before I got here, that has always been true. RLT has, I mean, how do you make it 86 years as a community arts organization if your tradition is not adaptation, right? We are trying to care for people. I say to Heather all the time, I think theater is about shrinking the distance between people. And the more we can do that, the better. And one of the things that I walk away with, a central thing that I maybe always thought, but now I have language to, thanks to Candace, is I believe theater should provoke. I believe theater should push buttons. I believe it should stir us. I believe it should make us wrestle with ideas. And so we will always do that at RLT. What we won't do is attack someone's personhood. What we won't put on stage is something that says you are less than because of who you are. Now, we might poke at your belief. We might poke at some perspectives you have on the world, but we're never going to harm you for being who you are. You are welcome here. And I think that that's just been, for me, like such an amazing way to start to articulate where our line is, especially as we're assessing, you know, whether it be Cinderella or any of the plays that we're going to do. And of course, we're going to get it wrong sometimes. But, you know, I think that we're so excited to have a community that's willing to talk to us about it.
Yes, we had this conversation around Cinderella, and we had so much learning to do around that show. But this is learning and growth that is going to inform how we do everything at Raleigh Little Theater. I mean, this doesn't stop here. This changes so many things. You know, Patrick was mentioning moving into the next show with Pride and Prejudice. And, you know, we're continuing to flex these muscles that are about always engaging our community, these muscles about, okay, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to mess up because we're going to learn from it. It's okay to have the hard conversations. You know, this isn't the only hard conversation that we've had this year. We've had others. We've messed up with other things with engaging our community. And, you know, one of the things that we know now is we can get through it, and we and this organization will be better on the other side of it for us going through it. And so, you know, it's yes, it's about Cinderella and it's about this one show, but it is about everything. Like, this just changes everything we do from this moment forward. And there's going to be more, right? There's going to be more mess ups. There's going to be more conversations. There's going to be more times that we're going to, like, there have been tears throughout this, and there's going to be more. But now we know there's another side to it, and it's going to be so much better on the other side.
So what did you learn from this process that you took into account with casting and with putting this production on stage this holiday season? What can audiences expect?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mike, who is the current director of the show, and his team have, for every year that they've done it, have been really pushing for more diversity and really, you know, taking a hard look at the play. And I think I really thank them for their contributions to this conversation, not just this year, but in years past. And, you know, I think what you can expect, and I think this is kind of, I hope it doesn't sound like just a bland answer, because I actually think it's real important that what you can expect is the same magical, beautiful Cinderella. It's just going to look a little different. Do you know what I mean? Like, he and his team are at work creating the magic that so many people in that survey responded to. And we're going to show that, you know, we can adapt and we can change and we can still deliver the same joy, the same fun, the same magic that people have grown to love. They're creative. Every year they change it and it adapts. And I just can't wait to see the finished product when they get finished kind of creating it in rehearsal. So, you know, there will be differences, but it will still like have the same spirit. And I think, you know, I think it's a pretty remarkable thing in our tradition of adaptation at RLT, that this will be the first year in the history of this show that the stepsisters will be played by two performers who are female presenting. And I'm super excited to see how that maybe adds a different texture to the show. We'll always be grateful for Tim and Dennis, and their legacy is informing the way these women are playing those roles for sure. And I just can't wait to see what that looks like when we open it.
The Raleigh Little Theater production of Cinderella opens December 3rd. I'll put a link to RLT's website in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Make a donation to support the work we're doing. Follow us on social media, on Facebook or Instagram at Beltline to Broadway, or visit us online at www.beltlinetobroadway.org. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.